What are you doing?
Good.
Now it's more. I'm gonna turn
off now.
Just turn it back on.
Okay.
It's off.
It's green.
You push. I got that.
Good morning. We are still in the morning, and we have a somewhat light internal affairs, but there are some substantive items, and notably, the first one that we're going to start off with is the legislative update. Again, you all were introduced to Adam Posse. I know some of you know him from your time in the legislature, but welcome. Some of you, I don't know if Commissioner Pullman has had an opportunity to meet with you, and Catherine Pennington and Casey, very invaluable folks here for our legislative team. So with that, I'd like to have you guys give us an update at this internal affairs meeting.
I'll be teeing it off this morning.
Thank you, Casey.
Commissioners, the 2017 legislative session is fast approaching. Session will begin on March 7th and run through March 5th.
May 5th.
I'm sorry, May 5th. That's why I have a sitting here. Next week, January 9th through the 12th, is the first full week of interim committee meetings in both the House and the Senate. We've distributed lists of the members for our substantive committees for your information. The Senate Communications, Energy, and Public Utilities Committee would not be meeting next week. However, the House Energy and Utilities Subcommittee is scheduled to meet on Wednesday, the 11th, from 9 a.m. to 11 a.m. I'll be giving a presentation at that meeting providing an overview of the PSC and the rate-making process. No other PSC-specific issues have been identified in any committee meetings thus far. Approximately 200 bills have been filed to date, none that would have a direct impact on the PSC's jurisdiction or the utilities we regulate. We have identified, however, several bills for monitoring, primarily because of the subject matter involved. For example, there are a few bills that would effectively prohibit hydraulic fracturing in Florida. House Bill 35 by Representative Jenny prohibits well stimulation treatments for the exploration and production of oil and natural gas. Senate Bill 98 by Senator Farmer, to be called the Stop Fracking Act, would prohibit extreme well stimulation and stop the DEP from issuing permits for that activity. Senator Farmer has also issued filed the Joint Resolution 108, which would seek a constitutional amendment to prohibit well stimulation in Florida. There's also another bill we're monitoring that relates to renewable energy devices, Senate Bill 90 by Senator Brandis. And this bill seeks to implement the constitutional amendment from August of 2016, as you're aware, that states that the value of renewable energy devices on people's property cannot be assessed for a property tax purposes. But we will continue to monitor activity down at the Capitol and keep you informed of bills of interest that come up.
Commissioners, any questions? I assume you all are having the usual tracking for the A, B, and C, and we'll keep commissioners informed every week on different bills that are being filed and the status of them, too.
We will do our best to keep you fully up to speed.
Excellent. What are you going to talk about next week?
Now,
we have service hearings, so unfortunately we can't be there.
Brenda says you're talking about rate making.
Yeah, I'm going to. I was kidding. I'm going to lay out some overview of our jurisdiction, some regulatory principles like the regulatory compact, the public interest, and then get into the rate case process, and revenue requirement, all that good stuff.
Good luck with that.
Thank you.
And let us know if you have any questions or need any additional help.
We'll do.
Commissioners, any questions?
Wednesday, the 11th, 9 to 11.
Thanks again.
Thank you.
Thank you. All right. Moving on to our general counsel's report. Keith.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I've got about 10, 15 minutes, a couple items to go over. I'll try to be as quick as I can.
Take your time, Keith. We have plenty of time.
Okay. First, I'd like to welcome you, Commissioner Pullman, to your first Internal Affairs Committee meeting here at the Commission. I was very honored 2 days ago that you had asked me to perform your swearing-in ceremony. I'm not trying to steal anyone's thunder, but I know that all of us are very excited to have you on board and part of our team. I, along with my staff, look forward to getting to know you and serving and working with you.
Thank you.
One thing you'll find out quickly here at the commission is how professional, experienced, knowledgeable, and genuinely helpful all of the commissioners and all of our staff are. Truly, it's a team effort, and we will always strive to have your back and make sure that you are objectively well-informed. Chair, I know I'm not going to – I know we have the announcement with Carolyn coming up, but she is on my staff, and I couldn't be more proud of her when you bring her up, and she's certainly not a more deserving person than her. When you look at value and indispensability, you have to look at the individual, and you have to look at their entire portfolio, and she is simply the consummate professional and absolutely essential to GCL and rises to the highest level in terms of her contributions, which are enormous. So I'm so proud of Carolyn Craig. She is outstanding. I am lucky to have her because without her, we'd be administratively in a nightmare.
And for those of you paying attention and wondering, what is he talking about? Yeah. Carolyn is the employee of the month for January. So
yes.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Sorry. I did steal your thunder there. Well, today I'd like to do three things briefly, and I would like to hand out copies, and I won't spend time on this, but just so you have them, I briefed Commissioner Pullman yesterday, but this is our newly revised ethics updated version for 2017 ethics manual. One thing I'd say about this, the only thing I'd say, we worked hard to try to present this information in a way that's easy to understand in bullet point format and without unnecessary statutory verbiage or a great deal of confusion or a discussion about case law. We've also included practice pointers in italics, notes on certain things that may help you think about how these requirements apply in the real world. So hopefully that'll be helpful. Secondly, with the chair's permission, as we move into 2017, I'd like to give you all a brief perception of my first year as the general counsel. And thirdly, we'd like to briefly discuss and get your collective approval to file an amicus brief in an FPL case, which is currently pending before the Supreme Court that came to our attention in early December. We've kind of discussed that with you already, but some things have changed slightly. We had a delay that the court gave not us, but some of the parties more extension of time to file, which allowed us to fully bring this back to you at internal.
So we'll get into that. Can you go over the updates first, please?
Yes. Perception of my first 10 months. I can sum it up by saying this is the best and most enjoyable job I've ever had. Aww. I enjoy being deeply involved in the issues, learning some of the seemingly arcane procedures that still confound me sometimes, listening and hopefully contributing. But I especially want to thank each of you commissioners and the chair and my wonderful attorneys for making me feel so welcome and part of the team here and for having my back for the past 10 months. The day I was appointed, I think I told this commission, I remember pretty clearly how grateful, honored, and humbled that I was to be appointed by all of you as your general counsel. And I still feel that way today. And I really can't express how thrilled that I am every day to come into the office. I can tell, and it's my attorneys that add value to that. I could tell you the time has flown by, and it's hard to believe it's been 10 months to me, and we've been through a couple of hearings and the FPL rate case already. Back last January, February, when I was first being interviewed by you individually, I discussed how I perceived this job in terms of my two main goals and my roles. One was being, and in no particular order, both equally important, one was being constantly attentive to, listening, and addressing the needs of the commission individually and collectively. The other was being a strong, supportive leader for my staff and group of attorneys in cultivating a culture of teamwork and camaraderie, including building a supportive work and mentoring environment. As I look back, I'm not going to grade myself on how well I performed in that role because I leave that to you and my staff. But in my first role, with respect to you all, I think I've gotten to know you all better individually. I've been determined to listen and be responsive to you in ways that address your concerns and help each of you make your decisions, your own decisions, on how you conduct your business as commissioners. I'm very conscious of your valuable time, which is why I don't call you all the time. But I think in 2017, I can do a better job of being even more communicative in different ways with each of you in the way that you want me to. And I've started to get a better feel for that. One of my priorities this year, and we've started to do this already, is look back at the FPL rate case and discuss how we can make the hearing process more efficient. We've already modified our OEPs, and Commissioner Pullman, I don't like acronyms either. That's order establishing procedures, slightly to address some new reoccurring issues that we've uncovered. But the goal is to deal with some of these issues on the front end with the pre-hearing officer in order to expedite the hearing process. But there's much more work to be done in terms of how we actually conduct the hearing and handling exhibits, and we want it to be as efficient as possible. And so we were going to seek your guidance and input as we develop suggestions over the next 6 months. We hope to implement some of those in the golf rate case coming up. In addition, though there's not been much rulemaking in 2016, we're not afraid to open up and look at our own rules and revise rules as necessary and as issues arise. For example, as a result of one recent case, we promised Commissioner Brzee and all the commissioners that we'd be evaluating and likely recommending some changes regarding how utilities, particularly water and sewer utilities, are required to keep a record of complaints of customers so that customers' complaints can easily be recorded and followed up on by water utilities, and for us to receive information in order to better evaluate quality of service. That's in motion now. We've gotten deeply. We've got a proposal on the table, and soon we'll be bringing a recommendation to you. The last time those series of rules were looked at, I think, was 1985. So, we're doing what we can to address what we think are very important issues. And there's nothing more, I think, as Commissioner Pullman meant that the important that customers are treated fairly. Finally, each of you, and sometimes all of you collectively, have presented interesting real-world ethical questions to me throughout this past year. Sometimes they fall in a gray area and are challenging to answer. First, I want to thank you all for asking the questions because that helps us to help you. And secondly, I hope that we've been able to present information to you in a clear and concise fashion that helps you make well-informed and good choices. Shifting to my role with my attorneys and staff, I have to say that I absolutely could not do my job without them. They have my back, and I hope that they are starting to see some evidence that I have their back. Simply put, I'm so proud of my staff and each attorney. I go down the list of how each of the younger ones is rising to the occasion now and starting to blossom. I can think of them, but I don't know. We have so many exciting attorneys. I can think how the more experienced are mentoring and willing to do whatever it takes. The empathy, patience, directness, and outside-the-box thinking that I stress with our attorneys constantly is starting to take. Without question, I will brag on each of them. And simply put, I have the best general counsel's office in all of state government because we want to be responsive, communicative with all the parties and outside interests. And it's easy to fall into a routine, but every conversation, every phone call, we treat with respect. And I get feedback on that, so I know. I remember Commissioner Brzee asking me how I would be able to motivate and support staff without routine or reasonable percentage pay increases. I remember my response, too. And in fact, I know that money is important, and unlike other agencies, we do have some luxury and ability to target pay raises each year. And in fact, we've done a wonderful job, I think, of spreading resources around to maintain and support our folks. But there are some other ways that to motivate and support our staff, which I think we've worked hard to do. And I apologize. I didn't mean to put you on the spot. I think that's a question I got from all of the commissioners because that's an important function and of what the general counsel is to do. And it always has been my perception. I give you credit because I really think that you have the empathy and understand the value in that. And all the commissioners do. This past year, we had some changes. Number one, we had one vacancy and lost two other attorneys, both experienced, but we were able to bring Walt Treweiler, an experienced attorney, on board. We were able to compete in the marketplace for Walt, and my goal with Walt was to add an experienced and proven mentor to our younger attorneys and have someone who could jump in relatively quickly and handle cases. Walt had as not disappointed, excelled in that role, and we also had an exhaustive interview process, a lengthy interview process. We had 90 applications for our two new positions. We wound up hiring Wesley Taylor and Stephanie Aquello, who you've met, and they've been in our employee newsletter. But these are stars in the making, and we are lucky to have them. They fit well within our other rising stars. But my point is, we took a lot of time. We took an enormous amount of time to get the two right people, and it's important that the people we hire fit with our culture of service, and these two do. And not only are they best and brightest as all of our, but they fit well, and that's what makes our team function well. Education, a priority of mine, and continues to be. First up in June, the Florida Public Service Commission hosted NARUC's National Conference of Regulatory Attorneys in Tampa.
Liang.
It was a week-long conference, which was attended by regulatory attorneys and commissioners from all over the country. Hats off to Liang Tang, who's not here today. She's recovering from some back issues. But she set a new high bar for the overall conference quality. And we had a great time that week and all learned a lot. But as always, before that happened, the question to me was one of budget and who could we send? I was determined to open this conference up to all of our attorneys who would benefit, and certainly all of our younger and intermediate ones, and to the extent we could, experienced ones who would also benefit. And we were able to have most all of our attorneys and staff attend. And I think that was a huge value, and they all appreciated that. That was quite a conference to attend and experience, and they all got great value out of that. And we're actually thrilled to be able to go to that because we don't get to go to many of those. Secondly, we were able to send one lawyer to rate school in October. My goal is to increase that one or two. That's a week-long, intensive, in-depth training on just the rate structure. And so it's extremely important that we offer that specifically to an attorney who has some experience but also interest. So we have to be selected, but we want to open that up yearly to all of our attorneys and phase that in. Thirdly, I tried to schedule relevant deposition training for several younger attorneys, but we were stymied by both hurricanes. We'll make that happen this year for sure. Fourth, we sent a handful of attorneys to a day-long APA conference in Tallahassee and also a relevant day-long solar energy conference in Jacksonville. And we try to pick these out in a way that's budget efficient for us. We've also been able to, I've launched instituted a lunch and learn for our attorneys where once every 3 months we get together over lunch and have a presentation developed by our own staff on particular skills training. We've been able to obtain CLE credit for that. Sixth, thanks to Liang, we've put together an annual 10-week course on utility law practice and theory to be taught by regulatory attorney legend Scott Heppling, I guess, and offered to two of our attorneys each year at no cost to us from Scott Heppling. Other attorneys from around the nation and country and from other PSCs will be participating. It's going to be an online course.
These are great updates. I think these are all wonderful.
Yeah, so we've done a lot. And all these opportunities have been done with a conscious, targeted eye on budget. Finally, I think my focus, I've had a focus on cross-training. And I've met with each and every attorney when I first got here over the course of a three-month period. A lot of them wanted to practice and get more hearing experience. So we've been able to look at all of our sections, including our appellate sections, and see what attorneys wanted to be involved in the rate case or a hearing process to give them that experience. What that does is give them value and appreciation and pride in their work. And what that does for me is build team depth. And you notice in the FPL rate case, we had Adria doing some depositions and participating. And in this upcoming golf rate case, we've got Liang and Kino Shop and some of the other attorneys, Kelly, involved in that. So I think everyone's pleased to be getting this cross-training. That's a way to motivate people, I think. So one of my goals for 2017, I think, is to get my staff together once every 6 to 8 weeks so all of our sections have better communication within each other. And I believe all these actions are important to instilling pride and value in our attorneys. So anyway, my renewed goal for 2017 is to continue to find new ways to provide a supportive environment for all our attorneys. And I want all of them to be able to advance their chosen profession and achieve pride in their work. I know that when they experience the thrill of working with others, but knowing they have a very important role in bringing and facilitating office, often complicated matters to resolution. It's a huge value to them and of service to you all. 2017 is already off and running now. We have the UIF rate case on the horizon, as well as the golf rate case and the legislature on the horizon. I'm going to be deeply involved in all facets of that. One thing I've learned over this past year is that there is no standard case. I was told there were highs and lows and peaks and valleys, but I've only seen peaks. Every case I've seen so far has presented new and unique challenges, but I think our job is to make your job easier, and our intent is to roll with the punches and approach these issues with enthusiasm and creative thinking where necessary. So I'm really proud of the year we've had in 2016. I really appreciate the opportunity you've given me to be your general counsel, and I know each of you won't hesitate ever to let me know of issues or concerns you have, and I look forward to the challenges ahead and am really excited about working with each of you in 2017, so thank you.
Keith, that was just great. I feel like we should clap.
No.
That was incredible.
No clapping.
What a great update. It's so refreshing. Really, to have this discussion in the public forum and to know, and I'm aware personally because you keep me informed, and I know you keep the other commissioners, but to let the public and other staffers know all of the work and innovations you've been doing at the legal in the legal department. I've seen them personally. I've witnessed them. You have such great attorneys. Adria Harper is just like a godsend. We're very lucky to have her at the commission as our ethics advisor and keeping us all on the straight and narrow. But you've been a great sounding board. Like I say, you're a refreshing attorney. You're someone who always thinks outside the box, and it's a pleasure to work with you. And
thank you, Commissioner.
And you're seminal.
I know. Yeah. Sorry.
And I know you've had a personal loss over the past few weeks, and we are deeply sorry. And I know you've managed to continue to work and stay on top of literally everything through that. And it just goes. It's a testament to your character. You're a tremendous person. I love working with you.
Thank you, Commissioner.
So we're lucky
really
to have you.
Thank you. Last thing, and this will last only 3 minutes, let me shift gears to the amicus brief. Samantha Cibula, our lead appellate lawyer, is going to give you a brief overview of the current case and why we recommend that the PSC participate as amicus in this case. We're able to answer questions after that and hopefully tee it up for a vote.
Good morning. Samantha Cibula of Commission Legal Staff. FPNL and the Siting Board have asked the Florida Supreme Court to review a Third District Court of Appeal decision.
Hey, Samantha, is your mic? There you go.
Pertaining to the siting of FPNL's Turkey Point Unit 6 and 7. Staff believes this case is of interest to the Commission because the Third DCA has held that the Siting Board has the authority to condition the certification of Turkey Point Unit 6 and 7 on FPNL installing the power lines for the project underground at FPNL's expense, and that the Siting Board's power does not conflict with the PSC's rate-making authority. The part of the decision that is of concern to the staff is where the third DCA held that the undergrounding could be at FPNL's expense. There is a Florida Supreme Court case from 1991, Florida Power Corp. versus Seminole County, where the Florida Supreme Court held that the Commission's jurisdiction to regulate the rates and service of public utilities, such as FPNL, preempts the authority of cities and counties to require utilities to place power lines underground. The basis for the court's holding in the Seminole County case was that utilities may need to expend large sums of money to underground power lines, and that these utility expenditures will then reflect in the rates of customers. The cities and counties in the matter before the third DCA argued that the transmission lines should be underground to address aesthetic concerns, and that the local ordinances required that the transmission lines should be underground. However, FPNL and the Siting Board took the position, consistent with the Seminole County case, that the Florida Public Service Commission, not the Siting Board, has an exclusive jurisdiction requiring undergrounding of transmission lines at the utility's expense, because such a determination would affect the utility's rates and service. In their petition to the Florida Supreme Court, FPNL and the Siting Board argue that the third DCA's decision directly conflicts with the Florida Supreme Court's decision in Seminole County and ask that the Florida Supreme Court review the third DCA's decision to resolve the conflict in these two cases. Staff is concerned that the third DCA's decision may take away some of the commission's ability to determine whether a utility's decision to underground power lines was a prudent utility expense. Staff believes that participating as an amicus in the Florida Supreme Court case in support of FPNL is important because it would give the commission the opportunity to provide the court with its opinion on its jurisdiction and the potential ramifications of the third DCA's decision. The purpose of participating as an amicus in a court proceeding is to aid the court in determining difficult issues and to help ensure all arguments are presented to the court before the court makes a decision. Staff believes that the commission's participation as an amicus would further this purpose. Our office will take all the steps necessary to seek leave from the court to participate as an amicus in this case if you choose to do so. It is totally up to the Florida Supreme Court whether it will accept jurisdiction to hear the case. And it's also within the court's jurisdiction ability to determine whether or not we should participate as an amicus. And Keith and I are available to address any questions that you might have.
Thank you, Samantha, for that overview. Commissioners, questions? Comments? Commissioner Pullman.
Thank you. As an amicus, do we participate at the same level or what is our ability to participate in the case? Are we participating in like kind with the other participants?
No, amicus is a friend of the court.
Yes.
We are not would not be a party to the proceeding. We would be filing in support of another party, which would be FPNL in this instance. So we can't raise any additional issues, but we can raise some arguments that are of the issues that are already presented.
So in effect, we're taking a side, similar to an intervener?
In this case, yes, we're recommending that we do take a side. We would be supporting FPNL to further explain our jurisdiction, our over undergrounding and how that would affect rate making.
Okay, thank you. May I ask an additional question?
Sure.
Do we understand or do we have a belief that this is, or in fact, is it only aesthetics on which the local governments are claiming control?
In the proceeding below, that's the argument that they made. And that's the portion that we're concerned about, where it said that the siting board could condition the undergrounding of the lines at FPNL's expense. And that's the portion that concerns us. And the issue below was that it was for aesthetic purposes. We do not have an issue if it was for, like, safety purposes or some other issue like that, but that's the portion that was the issue in the proceeding below.
Okay. Is it general counsel's position that they have any other basis for jurisdiction or control, the local governments, other than aesthetics?
There could be, like I said, maybe if there was a safety issue, and I don't think that wasn't an issue below.
I understand the below, yeah. But in the current case, do we anticipate that they will bring forth other bases?
No, they can't bring forth other bases. It's going to be subject to the record below, so they can't make new arguments in the Supreme Court proceeding.
Do they acknowledge the cost factor, or do we know?
There was the discussion of costs in the proceeding below.
And our position is that we are the agency that deals with analysis of costs.
Yes. Our position is that because it could result in costs, based on the Seminole County case, that it's within the PSC's jurisdiction to determine whether or not transmission lines should be underground, because it could result in higher costs to customers. And if the siting board made the determination that, yes, these lines should be underground and at FPNL's cost, then, you know, at that point, the PSC would probably not have a lot of discretion left to review the prudence of undergrounding those lines, because we'll have a government authority had said that they should underground the lines.
Any further questions?
I'm sorry. That's fine. Thank you.
Commissioner Graham.
Actually, I think she kind of stepped right into the question I was going to ask. If this ruling were to stand, then we have no authority to question prudence because it's basically jammed down our throat.
Potentially. We don't, until we actually see the case, I can't give you that answer. But that's the concern that we have and how this could play out. That could be the situation.
And then this could just open up a whole can of worms for future things coming up. If the local government says that because of aesthetics and it has to be underground and it could, regardless of the cost, sort of thing.
Yeah, that's the concern we have, is that not only in this case, but in other cases, when the siting board makes this determination, that it could result in that and that we might not have any discretion left when it came to the commission.
And I think that's probably what a lot of people are missing here, that you know, you could force these guys to put the stuff underground, but the local people are still the ones paying for it.
And I guess I guess that's the concern that we have with this holding, is that it says that FPNL is at FPNL's expense. Instead of the, and when it's come before the commission, it's always been, we've looked to see whether or not there's a need to underground, and if there's not a need, then it would always, we kind of look to whether it should be the causers, the ones that wanted the lines underground, to underground and pay for that cost.
But once again, that pulls that whole prudency question out of it.
Potentially.
Okay.
And we don't know for sure how it could play out, but I think it's important that we let the court know what we think our jurisdiction is in regard to it, so they can make an informed decision.
Well, then, if the question is if we should be amicus to this, I think that there's no doubt that we should be. But
Thank you, Commissioner Graham. Completely agree with you. Commissioner Brzee.
Thank you. So that brings, I guess I'm going to get a little further into that substance part of it, because part of the issue that is later on down the line, which we're talking about transmission lines, and the way the statutes are right now, if I'm a particular city or a county and I'm asking for something to be underground, then I have to pay that cost as a city. Mm-hmm. But if these are transmission lines that then benefit the whole system, then why shouldn't the whole system pay for it? And so that's further down the line as part of that discussion. Mm-hmm. And so and I understand our desire to protect our jurisdiction on this. So I'm sort of weary of the position that we might take by being a friend of the court in this, mm-hmm. considering the full context of where this whole thing has stemmed from. There's a whole set of cases that are associated with this particular issue that arose to some other dockets that we have that are open, and they came about because of those things. So I'm a little bit weary about us taking a position, like Commissioner Pullman, taking a side on a position on things that may still come before us in the future.
Samantha, would you like to respond to that and kind of maybe clarify the role of filing an amicus?
Well, I think the role is to give information to the court, to make sure the court has the best decision. And the issue is before the court. We're mentioned in it. So I think it's important that as the Public Service Commission that, you know, we give our opinion of what we think our jurisdiction is, and this is the vehicle.
Waive that right?
To waive that right would mean that, then, like I said, the issue is already in front of the court, so other parties will make those arguments, and the court won't have the benefit of what we think our jurisdiction is. And so we have a little bit more control in that regard, to tell them what we think our jurisdiction is. And to lay out what we think the ramifications are of that decision. So I think that's why it's beneficial to participate as an amicus in this proceeding.
Thank you. And Samantha, I value your legal opinion. I agree with you. I'm happy that you got to explain it from a legal perspective, too. I'm the only lawyer now. I'm the commission.
Oh.
I'd be happy to help you.
This is going to be fun. This is going to be fun. This is is great. I think this is a very important case, and I do think that you laid out clear reasons why we should do it. Can we talk about the timing, though?
The timing is what we have to do first. This is a kind of a different case. It's not a direct appeal. We're used to direct appeals to the court. In this instance, the third DCA has already made a decision. So the appeal that FPNL and the siting board have made to the Supreme Court is discretionary. So the Supreme Court doesn't have to take up the case. So they could file their petition. They're arguing right now why the Supreme Court has jurisdiction, but the Supreme Court could decide they don't want to hear the case. And at this point, there's an avenue for people that want to participate as an amicus to file a notice there's no particular date, but they say as soon as possible, as once the notice invoking jurisdiction has been filed, to file your notice saying we intend to be an amicus in the case if the court decides to take up the case on the merits. So there's no timing, there's no deadline, but we're supposed to do it as quick as possible. So
and then the Supreme Court will make a decision by...
There's no time frame in that either.
they'll make a decision. They'll make a decision first whether or not to take up the case.
Yeah.
That could be weeks. It could be months. When they make that decision, if they decide to take it up, they'll set oral argument. Briefs will be filed. Amicus briefs will come in within so many days, 15 days of the filing of the parties' briefs, and then the court will may or may not set a full argument and may or may not render a decision by the end of this year.
So if oral argument is granted as an amicus party, would we...
No, we would not participate in oral argument.
Okay, Commissioner Brzee has a question.
Yeah, so it sounds to me that we're not only talking about the amicus, but we're also talking a little bit about the rationale and maybe some strategy as to whether we should actually do it or not. Don't we have a provision that allows us to have a conversation about those type of things in a more
shady
executive session that allows us to do that so that we can...
Commissioner Brzee, I completely agree. I actually brought this up to our general counsel yesterday because when I was in local government, we had what was called a shade meeting, and they do that when pending litigation. And they are exempt from the sunshine, or not some public, public, because of talking about pending litigation and strategy. I think the Florida statutes has one as it relates to the commission, but I could be wrong. And our deputy,
can you give us a minute or two?
Yeah.
I think it
eventually comes out.
Is there a particular provision that applies just to the TSC?
Right.
Because otherwise you're giving your entire case,
your argument,
to the party.
It's in the sunshine now.
Well, go ahead. You can.
Why don't you guys do this? I think the goal right now is to get permission from the commission to file as amicus. Why don't you all investigate that and get back with us on whether further discussions are in that, unless you can locate it now.
But there is a provision in the Sunshine Law in Chapter 286 with respect to the type of meeting that you're talking about. I have not studied it closely enough to know whether in this particular instance it would apply.
So why don't you get back with the commissioners on that issue? But I think let's focus on whether this commission wants to go ahead and file an amicus. So I think that's what you're looking for, right?
And I just want to say that's why we're also saying in support of FPNL. They've set forth what the issue is, and ours would be consistent with their position.
Thank you. Commissioner Pullman has a question.
As a point of clarification in this setting and in the putting on the record for the benefit of the public, I ask the question of, in the context of taking a side. And we've talked about it in the sense that FPL intends, and I'm looking at our notes here that were provided to the commission, FPL plans to file, and as you discussed it, if I understand it, that they're planning to file to the Supreme Court asking that this be heard, that a decision will be made by the court whether or not to accept this, and as we've heard in the past few minutes. So nothing is in process yet.
No, that needs to be updated. They did file.
They did file.
And they've actually filed their jurisdictional briefs as well.
Right.
Okay, so FPL is the petitioner, if that's the correct word. And when we say we're taking a side with FPL, we're not really siding with FPL per se as an entity. We're just taking a side in the case because it's required.
And I think maybe the better term, the better way to frame it, I've been involved in many amicuses, is that our interest happens to be aligned with FPL in this case. That doesn't mean that we're making the same arguments or focusing on the same issue. We provide information in a different way and form and format than FPL does.
And ours. Thank you, sir. My interest is to clarify that there is a case. We have interests in the case. Is that correct?
Yes.
For our own purposes?
Yes.
We're just appealing the decision.
And we're looking to the court as a venue in which we're trying to get our information as a commission before the court.
So they have that information.
So the court has information with which to, upon which to assist in making their decision. Is that correct?
Yes, sir.
Yes, and FPL have made the argument that the PSC has jurisdiction over the undergrounding of electric utilities.
So as we understand, the issues that the PSC normally deals with are being discussed and brought into the case, and we would like to have the opportunity to speak to that.
Yes.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
So now I understand better, and I appreciate the opportunity to speak. Thank you.
And thank you. Well, we welcome questions. Absolutely. Braulio,
anything? Madam Chair, I think
We're clear. Okay, so let's get to what the staff is asking us to do right now, which is whether this commission would like to file as an amicus. And I've heard some discussion here. It sounds like there's some support.
Yeah, that, all right.
Hold on, Keith, please. Yeah. It sounds like there's some support here, and I think at this time we'll be ripe for a motion. Thank you, Commissioner Graham.
I move that we support the staff and move forward as a amicus in this case, supporting the appeal to the DCA decision.
Thank you. Any further discussion? Keith, you...
I was just going to say, we've also vetted this with our technical staff. This isn't purely legal to make sure we're on the right track.
Thank you. Okay, so we have a motion with a second. If there's no further discussion. Okay. Commissioner Brzee.
So I'm going to support this today because it protects our jurisdiction. But I think in the future when we have these type of things, I would really like for us to redo the research in terms of us having the ability to have a conversation about strategy and longer-term impact on the commission with respect to the decision that we're actually taking.
I completely understand. I respect that and agree.
Yeah.
Commissioner Pullman, further discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All right, the vote passes. Thank you for your work. I know you're...
Thank you, heard loud.
You are in for a ride. So we look forward to hearing back from you on those...
Yes.
...and that research. All right, moving to the Executive Director's Report. Mr. Bias.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Commissioners. Commissioner Pullman, welcome. On behalf of the entire staff of the commission, we look forward to working with you. I've had, fortunately, I've had a chance to meet with you personally, and I'm looking forward to doing it more often as well. So if there's ever anything that you need, we are at your service. We have a building full. I know I've told you, a building full of professionals that are itching to get in and do some work with you. So welcome again.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
Commissioners, I don't know how you follow general counsel's report, so I'm not even going to try. So what I thought I would do is throw some numbers at you as a year in review, and to kind of remind you of the things that you all have done, and by way of doing that, remind the staff and the commission as a whole of the things that we've done. And I'll start. It's in three groups, and the first group, I'll start with one number, and that's 22. 22 is the number of customer meetings and hearings that you as a commission held outside of this building. That's a significant number over the course of a year. And the reason it's significant, not because of the number itself, but because that's where the rubber meets the road, as they say. That's you all getting out there and meeting with the customers, hearing from the customers. Which is at its most, your obligations at their most basic. That's public service. So 22, a lot of those were part of the FPL rate case, as I'm sure you remember. I would name names, but there are too many to mention, so forgive me for not doing that, but certainly you know who they are. We lost one of them. I will name one name, Dick Durbin. Who helped run those meetings. I know you remember him well, but the Consumer Affairs Office helps you do that. Another number, 36. 36 is the number of individual consumer outreach events that, again, the Office of Consumer Affairs, the Division of Consumer Affairs, carried out on behalf of the Commission, on behalf of this agency. Disseminating information generally about the services, not just that we provide, but the where they can get services, utility services, communication services, et cetera, generally concerning Lifeline and things of that nature for the needy. That, again, is the Commission's most basic work, outreach to the customer. Madam Chair, I know that you've made it a point, you know, in your newsletters, which you can see on our website every month, about reaching out to the consumer, to the ratepayers, and that is our action at its most basic. As I said, I will add to that all of your efforts, all of our efforts to expand the reach of the website itself. But 22 and 36, keep those numbers in mind. That's how much personal contact, activities of personal contact. The next group of numbers, $684 million. $684 million is the amount of savings that was calculated to the ratepayers of Duke Energy by virtue of the securitization that took place last summer. It was a $1.2 billion securitization for the retirement of the Crystal River 3 nuclear plant. It was the single largest securitization that Florida's ever held. You all had a great part in that. It closed the book at long last on a very contentious case that I'm sure we're all very happy to have passed us. It was the culmination of legislation that we helped our legislature push through, and I think it's a significant number, obviously, because it put money, or it stands as very substantial savings that you all were able to flow back to the customer over the course of years. $3 million. $3 million is the number of the single largest enforcement action that this commission has ever carried out. It was a settlement with People's Gas for violations. Special mention to the engineering section and to general counsel as well for putting that effort together. Our gas inspectors, Rick Moses in particular. But this is, these are the actions that the commission takes. These are the actions that you, as a commission, were able to flow back to the customers. Another group of numbers. And this is just a snapshot, and you can find it on our annual report, and these numbers may be a little stale because they are a snapshot, is 63%. And these are looking, these are numbers looking forward. 63% represents the, it's a fuel diversity number. That is how much natural gas is used to fuel our generation today, or at the end of this year, as a mix. That number is projected to get a lot higher, as you well know, because our utilities keep are adding more and more natural gas generation. Now, that's going to get mitigated a little bit as they have been integrating more and more plans to build renewables. We'll see how that happens over the next few years. Speaking of renewables, our snapshot told us that there was about 1,860 reported megawatts installed, and that's spread over firm and non-firm capacity. 108 of that, 108 of those megawatts were privately owned by consumers. Now, smaller nuts and bolts numbers. Over the course of the last year, the commission opened 252 dockets, and we closed 278 dockets. The clerk's office received and processed 9,618 numbered documents. The Office of Consumer Affairs received 8,506 complaints and closed 8,545 complaints.
Really, say that again?
8,545 complaints. Those two numbers I would put in the first group because that is where our outward-facing service to the community, contact with the customers.
How many did you say were open?
8,506.
They closed more than they opened.
There's some carryover from previous years, and that's, those are just the nature of the beast, right? Now, these are more curious numbers, which I'll close with, and this is more personal to the agency. In the last year, we had 14 of your employees or your staffers retire. Those 14 staffers combined for 330 years of experience and institutional memory that walked out of these doors. Now, you've heard me say that before, but I just thought I'd mention it again. The average employee, just a little quiz and take a shot. How much, the average employee, how much experience do you think? Anybody?
3 years?
19.
19, 3, somebody said?
21.
21?
What did we win?
15. The number's 12, so 15, there you go. I had no idea, but there it is. The average employee has 12 years of experience at the PSC. Interesting number. And our turnover ratio was 12%, if anybody can make sense of that. We had 33 separations, 32 hires. Those are the snapshots and highlights of your year. I think we've done really well in the basics of contact with our consumers, contact with our customers, if you will. I think we've done really well, and I've said this again as well, our customers are also our utilities, the utilities that we regulate, and our outward-facing divisions, the clerk's office in particular, on how we interact with the utilities and their filings. You've heard me gush so often, probably to a point of annoyance, on how we're turning over the clerk's office and becoming more electronic so that the filings, we had our first electronic filing. I know you've heard me say that before. So our outward-facing divisions, consumer affairs, our public hearings and the clerk's office, all of those outward facing is how I'm trying to measure, you know, how our services are being delivered, and that's something that we're focusing on. The work of the professional divisions, I think you judge for yourselves. We get constant feedback, and that, for that, we're very grateful, and we're always trying to you know, improve our work in progress. With your help and your input, that's always like I said, a work in progress. And I'll take from Keith something that he said, and he told me this morning, we both had a good laugh. There is no standard repetitive case here, certainly not one that you see, and that we take to heart. Everything is up for grabs when something comes through the door. So, and one last word about the staff, and I won't, again, I can't name names. There's too many of them. But if there's any example, the FPNL rate case was something that was all hands on deck. So if I were to point anybody's work out, I'd be here all day. I hope that the staff knows how I feel about them. I know I've said this to you all time and time again. I'm the luckiest person I know. And I really mean that, because I get to work with a bunch of great professionals that I've known for over 20 years that taught me everything that I know, certainly not everything that they know by a long shot. And not to be overly obsequious, but I get to work with some of the finest commissioners I've ever had the pleasure of working with.
Oh, yeah.
So many out there that I love and respect as well. But thanks for the privilege, and here's to a better 2017. There's a lot of work already piling up on that yellow sheet. I'm sure you've looked at it, so good luck to us all, and thanks.
Oh, Brawley, that's great. Again, I feel like we should clap. I mean, these are great achievements, I appreciate it. This was very helpful. This is exactly what I like to hear. These numbers are excellent. And I can't say enough about our consumer education, our PIO office. They come up with the most creative ideas to connect with the customer.
They're
amazing. And they are an invaluable department here, and really is our connection with the customers and the public.
Now, they're not the only hard-working division.
They're not.
By a long shot, but yes, I know that they do have the most to do with the most contact with you all in your outward. I did want to make one more update that didn't get picked up in the legislative. On January 11th, there's also GovOps, our appropriations subcommittee is also meeting. It's a general committee meeting, no presentations to be held. They're mostly talking to us. They're going over the general budget frameworks.
So is staff?
We'll be attending. Our budget staff is attending. It's real low level, nothing. It's just a high, you know, hello, how do you do meeting.
Commissioners, do you have any questions for Mr. Baez? Those were some great figures. Yes, Commissioner Graham.
I'll wait for other.
None.
You're
ready.
Okay. I guess the one request I would have is when we have staff members that are going to be speaking before either the House or the Senate, is that something we can make sure that's on our calendar?
Will do.
Just in case it's one of those times we happen to be in town and want to sit in that meeting.
Absolutely.
It's a great request. And yes, it's one thing that I asked of Catherine Pennington and Adam Potts is to have weekly updates with our commission staff, our advisors on the ongoings. And since we meet at Internal Affairs once a month, we may not. And session is very active, and I imagine it's going to be a very active session for the commission. So I would encourage them to, you do a great job, but keep us as informed, even reach out to us as much as you can.
We're going to look into seeing if what you're asking can get picked up into the weekly update, like the emails. If there's a committee meeting that has a presentation, it probably could get picked up.
Is that okay?
If that's
yeah,
enough.
Perfect.
Okay.
Mark.
And
Mark?
Then also, Commissioner, if I may, there's a, we can work with you on this, in the Outlook calendar, there's a legislative calendar tab that's accessible that Casey and Catherine and Adam will populate, and it'll also include information about staff presentations. We'll make sure that's another.
You like the email?
We love the email. It stands out.
We'll bombard you with it. You can have access to the legislative calendar.
Thank you. Any other questions of Mr. Baez? I do want to say Mark Futrell has been deputy director for how many months now, Mark? Six? Eight?
Eight.
And just been completely impressed with the work you do, and you've really made it such a seamless transition from Lisa, and I've really enjoyed working with you. You're doing a great job.
Thank you. I gotta say, right and left brain here, seriously.
Absolutely.
And
absolutely.
Not to leave anybody out.
Okay, thank you. Anything else?
Thank you, commissioners.
Okay, we're going to go on to other matters now. I do want to highlight that, and I know some of you saw it maybe on our website, but Commissioner Brzee, he is our national just telecom guru, and he was reappointed to the FCC's IAC board committee, and he just serves us in such a great way. We're so very lucky to have you and serve in that capacity. So congratulations, Commissioner Brzee, join me. Just two other matters before I open it up here. We, of course, have to highlight our incredible employees of the month. We didn't have an IA in December because of the holiday party and all those things. So I wanted to highlight Amber Norris, who I personally am just crazy about. I love reading about Amber in the newsletter with her three children. She's an active mother, full-time employee, used to be an economics professor, and has been so invaluable to not just the Division of Accounting and Finance, but really to the whole commission. It's so exciting to see you be Employee of the Month in December, and I was grateful for that and have really enjoyed working with you, and I hope you enjoyed.
I appreciate the recognition.
Thank you.
I love working here. I love the people I work with, and it's even better to be recognized, but I certainly love what I do here and who I work with.
Thank you. Well, you're very loved here.
Yes.
So
it allowed me to be a full-time mother as well. I came from this position as a stay-at-home mom, and Bart took a chance on me, and I appreciate it, and I love it.
Well, Bart picks some really good people. He does. So congratulations. The other Employee of the Month for this month, and Keith kind of stole my thunder, was, and I don't have your star yet, but please feel free to use the parking spot immediately, but Carolyn Craig. Yes, Carolyn. When I asked about Carolyn and her background, one of your fellow members said, "Well, she's been there the longest. She knows everything. She knows where the bodies are buried and all that." But really, what I've learned about Carolyn is that she's been with the commission when they used to have typewriters, and there was no copy and pasting and
what's that?
Typewriters. Yeah. Not even brothers, you know, the little word processor. So she's worked with over 12 general counsels and really could probably tell us some history behind that. And she probably has some very, very colorful stories to share with us. But you're obviously a very invaluable asset to the whole agency.
We're so- I love what I do also, and I have great leaders. Keith, Marion, it's been great. That's why I stay here so long.
That's wonderful, and we're so lucky to have you here, and congratulations. I'm happy to have you. Commissioners, are there any other matters? All right. If not, this internal affairs meeting is adjourned.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Yep.